Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay? Am I clear? Go on and shout out if I get funny on the connection, and I'll adjust it. I want to thank Vilma, first of all. She is amazing. I just want to say that, you know, I'm so honored to be here. And, you know, Vilma was the kind of woman that made me want what this program has. When I talked to her, you know, her kindness were just infectious. And, you know, I just thank you so much, you know, because it's important to me to see that, because I know. And thank you for being so wonderful to me and asking me. And Steve, if you're on, thank you, Steve. And Jim, thank you for running the show tonight. And I want to welcome any new people that didn't identify. And, you know, it's wonderful to have you here. And I'm Tyla. I say I am a recovered alcoholic, and my God-given sobriety date is December 26, 1989. I have 31 years by the grace of God and this beautiful program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. And I want to say to anyone listening, you know, that what God's done in my life, he will do in all everyone's life. It's not unique. And what I'm going to share is my experience. And if it goes against what you know, just try to be open-minded, you know, and go with it. Because I know sometimes you hear stuff and you go, oh, I don't think that or that. The hardest thing I'm up against right now, I think, in my life is how much time I have and how many people I sponsor. And sometimes my head will tell me, you know, you don't need to read that. You don't need to do that. You know, you know that. And sometimes it's hard. You know, I have to, you know, ask God, you know, please set aside everything I think I know. You know, let me have that open mind that I need, because that, and when I work with Mark Houston, he said, this was a few years before he passed. And when I worked with him, he said to me, the biggest noose around my neck is how many people I sponsor and how much time I have. And you know what? That didn't have 20 years later. It has a lot of meaning to me. So I know that, you know, my love for this program and my enthusiasm for it even gets more as time goes on. And I'm very grateful for that. And I think it is because of my love of the program and my continuing to grow and to do step studies and to do workshops and to sponsor a lot of people and to do creative workshops. So I'll give you a quick rundown. I want to share a couple of things that meant the most. I know some of you have heard this that are here that know me, but I want to share a few things that have really meant the most to me going through the steps. I'm going to share a little bit about my story, but that is my present day experience. And that's what I've learned to share, the stuff that hopefully I can give you something to take home with you, something to consider, and I can share with you what has meant so much to me. You know, I got here off the streets. I'm from LA. I'm going to go fast through this because I just like to give you a little rundown. I'm from LA, and I designed clothes for 18 years in LA and in Hong Kong, India, and Thailand, and I lived over there. And I've always been an alcoholic. From the time I started to drink, which was 17, 18, I've always been an alcoholic. I never could control it. Never, 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 from the very beginning. And I went overseas to work because I'd worked here a long time because I wanted to get away from my alcoholism. I was running to a different place, you know, doing a geographic, but of course it didn't change anything. So I lived with a guy that worked undercover narcotics for 11 years, and it was there was a lot of violence, and it was a crazy relationship, and that's one reason I went overseas. And I came back, and I got out of that relationship, and my life just really started to hit bottom. And I could always maintain, when you design clothes, I could always maintain, I hope that's not, gosh, I can't believe it, you guys. I want to run out there and just tell them to stop, but it's too far, so I can't. Is it interfering? Can you hear me okay?
You're fine.
Okay, it'll stop in a minute, so I want to get closer. So I got out of that relationship, and I went completely downhill my whole life in every area. You know, doctor's opinion talks about alcoholic torture, and it's a great consideration. You know, where was my alcoholic torture? My alcoholic torture was spiritually, physically, mentally, and emotionally. Every single area of my life was tortured. And I, when I'm working with people, I like to do that as a consideration. You know, what, how, tell me how you were tortured, right? You know, and it's a great thing to talk about, but I ended up on the streets doing prostitution, and I was on the streets for 2 years, and I was living in motels and having men, a couple men took care of me. And one guy that took care of me, one John that took care of me, wanted me to talk to this guy and wanted me to talk to this guy that was an alcohol and drug counselor. And I was a mess. You know, I was drinking two bottles of vodka or a bottle and a half a day and doing a lot of other things. I was smoking crack. I was doing a lot of other things. I was a mess. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about my drugs, but I just mention it. And he wanted me to talk to this guy. I didn't want to talk to this guy. And finally, I agreed to talk to him. And that day, it was 2 o'clock-ish in the afternoon. I was living in a Howard Johnson's in a very rough area of San Bernardino. And this guy came into my room, and I saw him walking across the parking lot, and I thought, that guy looks kind of sick. You know, I didn't know what was wrong. What, he just didn't look healthy. And he walked into my room and he said, "Hi, my name's John. I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and I'm a drug and alcohol counselor. Talk to you." And I said, "You know, you're drinking from crack." And he said to me, "Drink it up and smoke it up, but just let me talk to you." And he talked to me for 2 hours, and he told me about this big book. He told me, he said, "I have 12 tools. I'll give you a tool a month. You'll never have to go back to alcohol again. You'll never have to live this way again." And you know what? I just was getting loaded and listening, and I thought it was an interesting story, you know, and his story was interesting, but you know, I only heard bits of it because I was getting so high and getting so drunk. And so he, after the end of 2 hours, he handed me a piece of paper and he had written his phone number on it. He said, "Here's my phone number. If you ever get sick of dying, give me a call." And he left. And, you know, I heard him. You know, it says what comes from the heart of one of us reaches the heart of someone else. And I would hear his voice in my head. I'd be drinking and I'd hear him. "You never have to live like this. I got 12 tools," right? All the things he was telling me, I would hear it in my head. And then I'd call him and I'd say, "Hey, John." "What do you want?" I say, "I want to talk." He goes, "Well," and he'd say, "Don't call me till you're done." Boom. And he'd hang up. You know, I didn't know, you guys. I had been in a clinic for an addiction years before, and someone talked to me about meetings, but I never went. And you know, I never even knew was AA, never knew a thing about it. So about 3 months I attempted suicide, and I had spiritual experience, and I'm freezing up. Is that better? Can you hear me, Louis? Can you hear me, Vilma?
It's better.
Auto is bad.
It's coming in and out. It's wobbly.
How is it now?
Let's try now.
Oh gosh, I'm so sorry, you guys. I don't usually have any trouble with it. Let me see.
You can always turn your video off. It makes it better.
How is it now, Vilma?
Now it's better. Let's try.
Can you hear me?
It's good, okay, Tala. Now? That's good.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, just shout out if it isn't, then I'll move it. And it usually gets okay then. So I, who turned off my video? That's so weird. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We can't hear you, so I turned your video off so you'll come through more clearly.
Can you hear me now?
Much better.
Okay. It just feels really odd not to see and be part of the meeting, you know, so I wish you'd give it another try, Jim, and let's see if it will get clear. Anyway, so I attempted suicide. Okay, how is that now?
It's better.
Okay, thanks, Jim. I'm so sorry, you guys. I don't have this trouble usually with my video at all. I attempted suicide, had a spiritual experience, and God spoke to me that night, and my life was completely changed. And I went to bed one person and woke up another person, and I called that guy that 12-stepped me and said, I told him what happened. I said, I have no idea what happened to me. I woke up the next morning. I had no desire to drink. And I was planning when I was going to drink every single morning. And I had no desire to drink. And from that on, that guy became my sponsor, took me through the steps. He sponsored me for 8 years until he died. I did not know he was a kidney transplant patient. And he 12-stepped me. That's when I said he looked sick. When he was without both kidneys, and he was on dialysis, and he 12-stepped me, or maybe he was without one. And anyway, he changed my life. And I went on to work the program. It was great. Life was good. I still had a lot of problems, because we all had problems. Life was hard in the beginning. I want to say that for me, I was really, really broke, and I used to count change to eat, and I was working for a delivery service. But I started to live this program. I started to do, gosh, you, Selena, is that you, Selena? Someone's telling me they can't hear me. Okay. How is it better now?
It's kind of in and out. It's not very clear to me. I don't know if it's just me, but it's not clear.
Is it clear
it's
to
in
hear,
and out. It's broken. Vilma?
Yes, try now.
Is it clear so now? Well,
yeah. Yeah, try now, Tyler.
I'm holding it now. I'm holding the phone. So let me just get centered a minute. So I was working the program and doing what the program said, and working at a regular job and doing what I needed to do. And as the years went on, and I sponsored and I did the steps and all the stuff you're supposed to do, when I was about 12 years sober, I was really suffering from something that I didn't know about. I was suffering from untreated alcoholism, and I'd never even heard the word before. And no one knew what I should do or what to do. I would go to people and say, you know what, I'm dying, this is going on. And they would say to me, just this too will pass, just pray and it'll be okay. And this too will pass and blah, blah, blah. And you know what? I was dying and I was passing, and I went up to my room and I thought, you know what? I'm 12 years sober at my room in my house, and I want to blow my brains out. And you know what, guys, I'm telling you this because it doesn't ever have to happen to you. What happened to me doesn't have to happen to anyone. No one that really works a strong program, and the program outlined in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, ever has to live like this. And I didn't know that. And the next day I met up with a gal that I sponsor, and she gave me a set of cassettes, and she said, listen to these. I know you love good speakers. Listen to these, and I think you'll love this guy. And you know, she'd never given me a set before, and I got in my car and I put it in, and it was Mark Houston, and oh my God, I was forever changed. That was a 6-set CD from the Glass House, and I'd never heard recovery like that. And I knew that I listened to that till I could quote every single thing on it. I knew that inside out. I transcribed the whole 6 set of CDs. That's what I like to do with really good CDs. I like to transcribe them and then share my experience as I transcribe them on a piece of paper. And I found Mark in Texas. He was in Texas then, about 3 months later, and I flew him to San Diego. And Mark took me through the steps. He took me through the Big Book Awakening. He took me through a process that I'd never done before, and it changed my life. And Mark came out for 5 years to San Diego and helped start a particular group here, the Big Book Awakening, and that has been very successful in the way we do the work. There's lots of ways to do the work that are successful. Primary Purpose, Joe and Charlie, there's all kinds of them. None of them, this is just the one that really worked for me and a lot of people that come to our group. And our group is dedicated for people to come to it to do the work. You know, that's what our main thing is. So one of the main things that Mark then introduced me to Dan S, Dan Sherman in Santa Monica, and I worked with him for 14 years, and he wrote the Big Book Awakening, and I, both of them are not alive now, and I was so blessed. I wanted to mention them and mention Dave M, who I work with now, because the people I've worked with have been so instrumental in the kind of recovery that I have, and teaching me what the Big Book is, because depth and weight is, depth is my intellectual understanding. The depth of the program is my understanding of it, and the depth of it is how I walk it out and how I walk it out in my life, because this is really an experimental. It's going to give me ideas, and I'm going to have to walk them out. I'm going to have to try them. Meditation doesn't happen overnight. Intuition doesn't happen overnight. It is a trial and error, and I'm going to have to walk these things out and get better at them as my life goes on. And so one of the things is, when Mark used to stay at my house, and one of the things is my prayer and meditation life was really minimal. The group that I hung out with, it was not strong. It wasn't important. We did not make it important. And Mark prayed and meditated every day from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock. And then I started living like that. I started doing what I saw that he did as I was going through the work. And my life changed. And for the last 20 years, it's 20 years since Mark first came here, 20 years, I have very rarely ever missed prayer and meditation in the morning. And I know that not like I'm so great, God is so great, because God, being able to be with God and spend that time with God is so powerful to me. I would never miss it. Once you get a taste of it, you will not miss it. But I never had a real taste of it because I didn't do it. So I didn't know what the spiritual malady is. I had no idea. I never heard it. I never knew, understood the unmanageability of my life. I never knew that I was suffering from the bedevilments. And I never understood what it meant, you know, that it says, you know, alcoholic death, spiritual way of life. Many times the book's going to tell me, you have a choice, but, you know, really, do I really have a choice? You know, or else? And what is or else? So it has me look at, you know, it takes me from being physically powerless. And you know what? I was such a low bottom that I did not really even look at the physical powerlessness of the Big Book very much, because I came in so low. I didn't think I needed it. And I needed it so bad because I didn't have a complete experience and understanding of what this book offers. I didn't understand alcoholism the way I needed to understand it. I didn't understand what I was up against. And if I don't understand what I'm up against, I am not going to do the practices of those 12 steps. I'm not going to move through that the way I need to. And I'm not going to do 10 and 11 the way I need to. And so I looked at those bedevilments, seeing, you know, I thought my unmanageable life was external, but seeing that my unmanageable life is internal, okay, that those bedevilments, as outlined on page 52, right? They take me out from behind the bottle. They say why living on page 51 was so unsatisfactory. And I write in my book sober. I write sober and all over the book in different places because I want that book to talk to me sober, because I'm sober now. And I'm going to tell you, I can get into the bedevilments and life being unsatisfactory sober. So I put it written there. So I look at the bedevilments to see, it is a reflection of my internal condition. How am I doing? Am I fit spiritual condition? It gives me a temperature gauge of my internal spiritual condition. Am I full of fear? Am I having trouble in personal relationships? Can I make a living, a life worthwhile? Am I full of fear? All of these things, it shows me. And one of the best exercises that I've done with this is to write down the 10, this is for you, Alex, because I knew she'd love this. I write down the 10 most important relationships in my life right now. Okay. And also all the other bedevilments, but the first 10, the most important relationships. Okay. And I asked God to plead in a meditation way at home by myself with God, God, please show me the trouble with my brother. And I intuitively write what I hear from God, because I've already made conscious contact with God. If I haven't made conscious contact with God, I wouldn't have a sobriety date. If I have a mental obsession and a physical craving and I can't keep away from a drink for 10 minutes, let alone 10 days, something's happened. So God, I'm in the grace of God, a God that I may not know, a God that I might not know isn't even in contact with me, but God is in contact with me. So, So I look at those 10 relationships going down and asking, what's my trouble with my brother? What's my trouble with my sponsor? What's my trouble with my spiritual guide? What's my trouble with my attorney? Whatever it is. And I write down intuitively what God tells me. And underneath that paragraph of the bedevilments is, and I don't want to misquote it. So underneath that, because this exercise is so good. And you know, you guys, my number is right next to my name. And if you want any info about it or anything I can help you with, call me. That's why my number's there. Okay. Because I'm here to help. There's a paragraph right under that says, when we saw others solve their problems in a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. My ideas did not work, but the God idea did. So I write down all of intuitively God's answers to everything. God, please show me the trouble with being useless. Please show me the trouble with fear. Please show me the trouble with not being able to make a living. And I intuitively write all that down in the 10 most important relationships. And very rarely does anyone put God on the 10 most important relationships. And God should be on the top, right? So, you don't have to have trouble with them. They're just the 10 most important relationships. I may think I don't have trouble with them, but I don't know what God's going to reveal to me. So I go down and do that. Then I go down in a meditative way and I write my solution, Tyler's solution and Tyler's idea for a solution to every relationship in all the areas of the bedevilments. And then when I get over to God's everything or God's nothing, what is my choice to be? I go down and I write what is God's idea for all of those relationships. And then when I get to step 10 and I'm there at a vision of God's will for me, I go back and look at that again. What is God's idea for a solution to all those? Because that turns into God's vision for me in all those areas at step 10. It's a very powerful exercise, and it was life-changing for me, and it really helped me. So I wanted to share that with you. I thought when I'm coming on today, I wanted to share some things that have really impacted me recently, because, you know, I go through all 12 steps. I used to go through every year and for a long time, because Mark and those guys out of Denver were doing it like that. And I just, you know, you want what they have, you do what they do. And I would just do whatever they did. But now I go through about every 2 years, 3 years. And I just did a workshop and went through the work again. And it was great and awesome, because you know what? I don't know always when I am not fit spiritually, because for me, and I believe it's probably for everyone, but I have trouble. The spiritual malady, let me just go back to spiritual malady. The spiritual malady is transparent. It's the unmanageability of my spirit. It is transparent. Like, what does God look like? You can't see it. But the bedevilments on 52 give me a reflection of it, a temperature of what it is going on in my inside of me. I have a spiritual disorder inside of me. Okay. And it is, my spirit is out of order. I stand in the place of God instead of standing next to God. And I don't know it. And I find that's true when I go through the steps. It may not be as extreme each time, but I find it's true that I have gotten back in that place. You know, the ego rebuilds and I can start to edge God out. I have to stay very, which I love. I'm very, very active in 10 and 11, you know, both of them. And I do them every day. And I spend time in the nightly review. I do it because it has changed my life. And I want to be as spiritually fit as I can. And that is, to me, the main thing that helps me. So that spiritual disorder can get into an ordered place. It is separation from God, and it can get into an ordered place through the 12 steps, and it can stay there, and it can veer, you know, the spiritual path isn't a straight line. It can veer off and on at times, right? Does it mean I'm going to drink? Well, if the spiritual malady, the unmanageability, the disorder inside of me gets extreme enough, it does put me in danger of insanity returning, and insanity comes, and then the mental obsession, and then I could pick up. So I need to see that, but I don't live in fear of that. I don't live, oh my God, what, I'm scared I'm going to drink, blah, blah, blah. No, I don't live in any fear of that, because I do the practices that promise me fit spiritual condition. And I feel spiritually fit most of the time. And it's not about feeling God. It's about knowing God. God is a knowing, not a feeling to me. I know that God is there. It's like, you know, if you have kids, like Selena has kids, you know, your kid's over, you know, five doors from your house, right? And I know if something bad is going on with Selena's kid, I guarantee you she's got a feeling, like better call him, right? That's the way God is. There's that intuitive knowing that he's there, whether I feel it or not. If I put that God's a feeling, when I don't feel him, then he's not there. And that's a problem, because they're going to talk to me in the fourth step about being blocked. And I'm going to tell you right now that I don't believe I'm ever blocked from God. This is going to be hard. Was hard for me to see and hard for me to digest, but I'm never blocked. If I'm blocked for God, how did I write inventory? If I'm blocked for God, how do I have any time in the program? I'm not blocked. It says my self-will. I'm blocked by my delusions, my resentment. I'm not blocked from God. It's all a friggin' delusion, but it seems real because it tells me on the bottom of 66, fancied or real. Well, the biggest fantasy that I'm blocked from God, and it's not true. It's impossible. My fear, my resentment, my dishonesty, and my selfishness cannot be more powerful than God. No way. I know you guys, it was shocking to me too. When I was hearing it, right? When I was hearing it and working with the person that was showing me this, but I had called, this person says I called him 100 times. That's how many times I called him to talk about the fact that I didn't believe we were blocked. I never did believe it, but I didn't really understand how it was or how it came about till he really explained it to me. And now I get it, because I don't see how I can ever be blocked from God except by my own delusions. So renewing that relationship with God, I'm looking at the time, renewing that relationship with God in the third step, and looking at, well, first of all, God's everything or God's nothing. You know, that's a great consideration for me, because I used to think God's everything because of God's power, right? God has this immense power, so he's everything. Then I go down to God's everything or I'm everything. That's really the choice, right? And it is that black and white. But God's everything to me because of the enormity of God. God is everything to me. All the strength, all the direction, all the caring, all the love. One of the biggest life-changing things was for me to see when I wrote inventory in that third column, right, with an extended third column, right? When I wrote inventory in that, to see all my dependence, you know, Bill talks about emotional sobriety, my dependence and my demands, all my dependence and demands on people to give me what only God can give me. That is the story of my life. And that's a place that I have to watch in my life, as it says in step 10, you know, when I look at the nightly review, watch, not wait, watch, right? I'm watching to see that I don't get in that place and get off track again, because God will give me the power to stay. Okay, that was funny, Jim. I'm back. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I just, it's funny, but anyway, so when I saw in that third column, I never did an extended third column until I worked with Mark and Dan. And the extended third column was so life-changing for me, because I could say, oh yeah, you know, I'm mad at my brother, right? Because my brother jacked me around, lied to me, and took money from me, right? And so I see self-esteem. I can say, oh yeah, self-esteem's affected, but how is self-esteem affected? What is the role I assign myself? Because it says I'm in the world to play the role God assigns. I better see how I play God. It says, you know, on page 61, that I'm the actor, being the director, but really I'm a producer of confusion. I'm really the producer of confusion. And so I don't turn to God like I need to, for me, unless I see that third column, unless I see all of the steps. But as the third column was very life-changing for me, because as I go down there and do all of that third column in extended way, self-esteem, ambition, pride, personal relationships, and write out on them, and then I go back and I ask what God would have me be in each one of those. What's the role God would assign me in this? That's in a meditative way. That's not with someone. It's meditative between me and God, right? To see what God would have, because I'm building direct communication with God. That's what these guys were doing in the Oxford group. This is what the book shares with me. This is the kind of relationship I can have with God. And if you don't try it, you won't have it. And it works. And all the gals I work with start out in the beginning with prayer and meditation and step 11 from the beginning that I work with them, because it is life-changing. It's different when you get there through the work, but it's life-changing. And I want to go over to step 3. And I thought, you know, what is alcoholism? You know, I'm jumping around, I know, but what is alcoholism? Isn't it selfishness, self-centeredness? Isn't it? The book says we have self-centeredness has to be smashed. Okay. So that paragraph, this was something that I never was ever proven to me in inventory any way I did it. And this paragraph must get proven on page 62. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. That's alcoholism. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate, seemingly without provocation. I did nothing, but I invariably find that sometime I made decisions based on, invariably means every time. I invariably find that sometime in the past I made decisions based on self would put me in a position to be hurt. This must get proven in inventory or my troubles are not of my own making. If I continue to remain a victim of the world around me, I will continue to drink. I will live a miserable life. I will be a victim, and victims do not have happy lives. And I know there's real victims from abuse and all of that, and that is true, but you also can get free, because this is about freedom. And you can get free. And I've seen it over and over again. So if selfishness and self-centeredness is the root, so here I am, I'm Tyla, and I'm a tree. Just think of me as a tree. And so I have these roots, I'm selfish and self-centered, and I have these roots and they go into the soil, right? And in order for this tree to be nurtured, it has to have nutrients. And in that soil, it is nurtured by fear, 100 forms of fear, 100 forms of self-delusion, 100 forms of self-seeking, and 100 forms of self-pity. That's 400 forms. Do you think I can handle that? No. So as I have this spiritual awakening, you know, Bill is caught up in this thing with the soil. Remember, if my roots are grounded in a power greater than myself, my life will be recreated. And then he said, my roots touch new soil in Bill's story. And so he has it. So what if those nutrients were different than that nurtured me? What if instead of fear, it was trust and courage from God, like it says in the fear page? What instead of self-delusion, it was truth and honesty? What instead of self-seeking, it was God-seeking? What instead of self-pity, it was happy, joyous, and free? And what if I began to be nurtured in that kind of environment instead of nurtured in the kind that it says on this page? Then selfishness would turn into selflessness. Self-centeredness would turn into God-centeredness, and my life would be different. And that's what the steps promise us, and the steps will give that to us. And we can keep that soil nurtured by continuing to live in 10 and 11 and continuing to practice all of the practices and the disciplines that this book is incredible that it offers us. Because I never saw how I made decisions based on self. I never saw that on page 66. I never saw you were sick like me. This is a sick person. How can I be helpful? Not a sick person, but sick like me. I never saw that. And that turns it all around. We look the way we do the work. We look at how have I done what the person in column 1 did to me and others. This is life changing. It gives you a whole new look at the world. And this is a sick man. How can I be helpful? And we, one of the other things, let's see what time is. One of the other things is when I got to doing a fifth step before, I never had did a fifth step in this, I've done in the last 20 years. Doing a fifth step, looking at, admitted to God, to myself, another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs. Admitted, so I look at, from a six-step perspective, I'm going to look at hold on, I'm going to read to you. On step six, it says, am I now ready to let God remove from me all the things which I admitted are objectionable? I'm going to hear a fifth step from the point of what's objectionable. I'm going to ask them, do you find this objectionable? Can you see on your own power you couldn't have behaved any differently? Is there anything you're clinging to that you're unwilling to let go of? Because if you are, we're going to talk, because I don't want them clinging to anything when they get into six and seven. Okay. So we do it from a six-step perspective. So I'm looking at what's objectionable to you, to God, to other people, and to a spiritual way of life. Okay. Because we now live on a spiritual basis of life. A spiritual basis of life is relying and trusting God. That's what the book says. Not relying and trusting my sponsor. It's nice to trust your sponsor, but this just jumped in there because I feel so strong about it. My job as a sponsor is to get you reliant on God and not reliant on me. I have an absolute responsibility to show you that. I'm there for you, but I want you to get it from God. God wants direct contact with you, and I want you to have that. I don't know what's best for you, but I know God does. So as I'm doing that fifth step with people, it says that we admitted to God to another person and ourselves the exact nature. And it says on page 72, it talks about the exact nature, talks about my defects of character and the nature of my defects. And I never knew what the difference was, because anytime the book mentions nature, it's talking about inside of me. Like when it talks about in the bedevilments, my emotional nature, that is not my emotions. My emotions are external that you may see, but my emotional nature is what I feel on the inside of me. See, if how I experience the world changes, my whole life changes. And Alex knows this, she lives it, and she knows it is absolutely one of the most life-saving things, life-changing things. You guys, when I got this to the deepest part of my heart, how I experience the world around me is the way I treat people. I have a lot with the power of God. I have a lot of influence on the way I experience life. You want life to be great? You start treating people great. You start treating that waitress with kindness that can't talk back to you, and that lady, that teller at the bank, and the checkout person at the market. You start treating every person. I try to treat every person that I come in contact with as sent to me directly by God, because God is my father, God is my director, and God is my principal, and he's my employer. And I believe that he's directing every bit of my life, including the waitress that waits on my table. I believe she's my sister. I believe that the way that I treat her can have an influence, a kindness on her. Was I loving and kind to all? You're going to have days, if you're not doing the nightly review, you're not going to know how you progress. You will have days where you can say, yes, I was loving and kind to all. I was loving and kind to all many days, but it didn't always happen like that. It's progressed like that. But if I'm not doing the nightly review, I'm not going to know that I'm making progress. So back to the nature. So in the fifth step, when they're asking me to look at my defects of character and the nature of my defects, and if I don't have an experience deep enough with these steps to know that there's no working on these things, there's no working on my character defects, there's no working on the nature of my defects. Maybe I can work on my defects of character. Maybe I can be nicer to Susie at the meeting. I can just kind of self-will it and try to do it. I'll try to be nicer. But the problem is my meanness and selfishness to Susie, that defect of character does not come from that. It comes from the fear of rejection deep inside of me. It comes from the idea that if I'm not defensive to Susie, she's going to take advantage of me. That's a delusion I have. So if I don't get in touch with the nature, which is the fear and the delusion in the fourth column that drives those defects of character, I will not be pushed to six and seven at the same level. I will not see the depth to which I need a relationship with God. I won't understand it. And I have to have that. You guys, this is so life-changing. I get so excited to share it with you because it so changed my life. My life is so different today as a result of the way that I do the work. And I'm here to help anyone that wants help with it and to show you how we do it. So I have to get an idea of the nature, because there's no working on the nature. There's no working on the fear and delusion. There's none. There's God. I may work on the selfishness and the self-seeking I may be able to. Defects, but I'm not going to work on the fear and the delusion. And that pushes me to a deeper, to a more powerless place as I do, and in more desperation as I do 6 and 7. And so after I get done, let me see what time it is. How much time do I have, Jim?
You got 15 minutes to fill up with more good stuff.
Thank you, honey. You're so kind. So as they finish the fifth step with me, and we do, we look at page 75, and I do this with whoever I'm doing the work with. I look at the promises, and then it has returning home. We find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our hearts that we know him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we had admitted anything, for we're building an arch through which we shall pass a free man or woman at last. So it asked me to review the first 5 proposals, the first 5 steps. This is after I finished the fifth step. This is after I've read the promises, right? I'm going to review the first 5 proposals, 1, 2, and 3, 4, and 5. But I don't need to review 5 because I just did a fifth step. But I'm going to review 1, 2, and 3. But I'm going to review a 4th step in my 6th step hour alone. I'm going to find an hour alone. And that's what the people, not with my sponsor, with God, an hour alone. And I'm going to review my 4th step. And the way this is so, I can't even tell you, this is so powerful and so life-changing, the way that I was taught to do this. And this was from Dan S. And so what I do is in that hour alone, I pray, I thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know him better. I review the first 3 proposals, asking myself, do I feel solid about step 1, 2, and 3? Do I see what's objectionable about those steps? And I review that with God in meditation. Then I have my inventory in front of me. And what I do in that step 6, I pick up one of the resentment inventories. Let's say it was to my brother, okay? I pick it up. I look at it. Now I've already fifth-stepped it. I don't have to reread it. I just look at it front and back. I put it down. And in a meditative, contemplative way, I close my eyes and I picture my brother in front of me. You guys, this is so powerful. I picture my brother in front of me and I ask these questions. Let me see where I had that. I want to make sure I have. Do I see what's objectionable about this interaction? Do I see on my own power I couldn't have done any differently or behaved any differently? Is there anything I'm clinging to that I'm unwilling to let go of? If I'm clinging in that moment, I pray. I shouldn't be clinging, because if I was clinging, the person I fifth step with would have gone over it. Anyone that's clinging that I'm seeing, we go over it in step 5. It's very rare anybody's clinging. Is there anything I'm clinging to that I'm unwilling to let go of? I'm picturing my brother in front of me. Then I say, am I willing to turn to God for help with everything I find objectionable from now on? Not from the past, from now on. And then I say, am I willing to forgive? Now, you may say, well, that's not in the book. Oh, yes, it is. On the bottom of page 77, it says, we go to them in amends in a helpful and forgiving spirit. Am I going to fake that? I talk about forgiveness all the way through the 4th step. Remember, I hold you in debt to me. You owe me. And am I willing to cancel that debt? Once I'm willing, I have found that God carries my heart. Okay. So I go through all the inventory like that in a contemplative way. I go through fear inventory like that, the sex relation inventory. I read God my sex ideal. When that's all done, and I'm sitting in my room, I look at the door in my room and I picture on top of that door an arch in my own decoration, an arch, an art deco arch, early Victorian arch, whatever comes to you, you picture that arch on top of that door, because that's the arch you're going to walk through. And then I say the 7th step prayer, my creator. And remember, my creator, only God that created me, only that that created my nature can change my nature. And my nature needs to be changed because it's coming from a disordered place and God can change it, my creator. I'm now willing you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character. which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And then I get up and I walk through that door, through the arch, and everything on my side of the door is my life, step 1 through 6. That's why 6 and 7 are so small, because it includes 1 through step 6. And I walk through that door and everything in my life from the past is gone. Please remove from me anything that stands in the way of my usefulness. I don't know what God's going to remove. But I walk through that door, a new woman, hand in hand, as it says on the broad highway, hand in hand with the creator of the universe, to a new way of life. And this, you guys, was life-changing, the way that I was taught to do this work, and it has been with the women I've taken through. And so real quickly, I want to just talk about living in step 10 and 11. And I've made all of my amends, and I'm not going to go into all the amends because I want to talk about 10 and 11 for a minute. You know, we've entered the world of the spirit. I've entered the world of the spirit. What does that mean to me? You see, it talks about, I'm going to get over there to it. It talks about on page 85, this meant a lot to me too, that it says, to some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. Being able to operate from the world in the spirit will mean that I will have power over my mind, my body, and my emotions, because I will be operating from the world of the spirit. My six senses, the five senses are see, hear, taste, touch, and smell. Every decision I made in my life was based on those five senses. Every guy I got in a relationship with was what I could see, what I could smell, what I could taste, right? If it looked good, it was good. If it looked bad, it was bad. And I lived my life from those five senses, and it didn't work. This book is offering me to live from the sixth sense, God consciousness, to be able to see it from the perspective of God, to see it differently, to see it from the spiritual realm, which is within each and every one of us, God consciousness. And that changes my whole life. Because when someone comes to me with a problem and they're dumping all their problem, right? Am I going to give them a solution from this earth, or am I going to give them a solution from heaven? And the gals on here that know me, they know how much I pray with the women I sponsor. I pray with them on the phone. I pray with them all the time. Prayer is one of the biggest parts of my life, if not the biggest. Prayer is life-changing. And I didn't know it. I didn't know it for a long time. But prayer is an incredible part of my life today. And as I look, I just want to go over the nightly review. As I look at the nightly review, you know, and I look at hindsight. What happened during step 10? Hindsight becomes insight, becomes foresight. When I look at hindsight, right? What happened during the day? What could I have done differently? And I look to see and go over how I could have done things differently. It gets like stamped in my consciousness. It may take time, but it gets there. And I start to change. When I see, and I write letters to God every day. I have a huge notebook full of letters to God. I write to God every day. And that's how I do. Thank you, Alex. Are you doing it too, Alex? It's so good, you guys, because it gave me an intimate relationship. I've been doing it for 20 years, letters to God. And that's how I look at what happened in step 10 and happened in step 11 in the nightly review. That's how I look at it, because I write letters to God and I tell him what I saw and what I need help with. And I ask what corrective measures I need to take, because sometimes I don't know. And why do I ask for God's forgiveness? Because God doesn't want me to treat the people the way I've treated some of them. That is not what God wants. And if I have been shitty to someone, if I've been that way to someone, I got to go to God and say, that's not the way you want me to treat your kids. And I know it. And you know, you guys, I don't want to. because I didn't have a conscience when I got here. And now I have a conscience and a consciousness. I have God consciousness, which I never had. I didn't care. I hurt so many people. And you guys, I didn't want to live like that, but I was so sick. I could not help it. And if anyone can get this program, if anyone can get what I have, anyone can get the program the way I have it. Any of you, I don't have anything. I work hard, but I don't work hard for God's love. God loves me because of who God is. I am his beloved child, and so are you. And he loves me dearly, and he loves you. And I want to read something, and I'm going to wrap it up. And I just want to say the greatest part of my life is working with others. Nothing will change your life so much as working with others. I have a love and a unity and a sisterhood and a brotherhood in my life like nothing else. I feel like I have hit the jackpot, like I have found gold, which I have. And if I mine it the rest of my life, that's what I have to do. And I have the greatest life. I am so grateful, you guys, for the life I have. I'm so grateful for God and for being here with you. And I just can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for letting me be here. And I want to read something and we'll wrap it up. Okay. This is from one of my favorite authors, Henry Nouwen. And I read him all the time. At issue here is the question, to whom do I belong? God or to the world? Many of my daily can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay, I'm sorry. To whom do I belong, God or to the world? Many of my daily preoccupations suggest that I belong more to the world than to God. A little criticism makes me angry. A little rejection makes me depressed. A little praise raises my spirits, and a little success excites me. It takes very little to raise me up or thrust me down. Often I am like a small boat on the ocean, completely at the mercy of its waves. All the time and energy I spend in keeping some kind of balance and preventing myself from being tipped over and drowning shows that my life is mostly for survival. But an anxious struggle resulting from this mistaken idea that it is the world that defines me. It is the bondage of self. Continually trying to get from the world what only God can give me. Being spiritually sick, turned inside out. When my focus is on God, not the world, I have a stability. God is everything. In the care of God, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Tyler.
You're so welcome.